Have your say on the Vectis Radio phone-in. Phone 01983 527 444.
Okay then, so we've got the one, the only, the legendary, the local guy, nice guy, David Randini's in. Hi, David.
Good morning. Or should I say afternoon now, Ian?
Good afternoon now, you see. Been up long?
Yeah.
What time does David Randini get up in the morning?
6:30 normally, because my son goes to Brockenhurst College, so I have to drive him there in the mornings.
Would you drive to the ferry?
To Lymington, yeah.
You drive to Lymington?
Yeah.
Good.
Drive to Yarmouth. Drive to Yarmouth. Could drive to Lymington.
You could drive to Lymington if you had the proper car and you waved your magic wand, I'm sure.
Yeah, when I was a little boy, they used to have a bloke who had an amphibious car. He used to come across at Ryde Seafront, go on that western beach, and he used to just come up out of the water. It was cool.
How long have you been a magician?
That's a good question. Do you mean full time, or do you mean I turned professional when I was about 24. Well, I was 24. I'm 49 now, so that was 25 years ago, just before Christmas.
So you don't look 49. I thought you were about the same age as me, roughly, give or take.
We are, aren't we?
No. I'm only 46.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Crikey.
I'm just a baby.
Yeah.
So you started when you were 24 then?
Yeah. Well, it started full time when I was 24. Before that, I used to help my dad, the great Randini. I'm not so great, but I keep practicing. And I used to help him at different shows. I think what happened was my dad was in the fire service. He was at Ryde. And when I used to help him with the show, after so long, the siren would go or the bleep would go, and he'd say, "Oh, my son will finish the show." And one day, Mingellas, they used to... I was doing Ryde Borough Town Party or whatever it was called, and my dad walked on with this little fireball thing that he turned into flowers. He walked on... Because I used to have a room up above Mingellas in Ryde. That's where, I guess it's just, is it now? It used to be Oliver's, Freeman, Hardy and Willis's and all that down there.
Yeah.
Opposite where Woolworths used to be. They used to have a big room at the top. And they had a party there. He walked on and his bleat went and he said, "And I'll hand over to my son." And off he went. And I thought, well, you know, so I had to do the whole show anyway.
All right. Magic.
I guess it is. I don't know when I started. That's the honest truth. I used to go to magic conventions when I was a little boy. And my dad used to... Am I talking too much?
No, not at all. I bet there are people listening to this and they're they might even be cross-legged. Do you know what I mean? It's a great story.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I used to go to magic conventions things when I was a little boy. And it's a long story, but I used to be the only child at the magic conventions. And the reason was that I was born the youngest of three children, and I still am, funnily enough. and there's 4 years between all of us. So when I was 4, my sister was 8, my brother was 12. And what happened was that they didn't really like kids at magic conventions because it was like in those days, they didn't encourage youngsters to come around. But because my brother went when he was about 16, they let me come. But I had to come, there was no room for children. So they used to sign me in as a ladies' member. That's what I used to have to go as, a ladies' member, which the only disadvantage was I used to have to go to the ladies' event when I did flower arranging or whatever it was. They always had a magic show as well. I used to just serve them with biscuits. But what it meant was that when I went to the magic shows, I started learning from a very early age. And if a magician was doing a lecture about children or whatever, they'd always have me up on stage. So from a very early age, I was plucked out of the audience and put up in front of perhaps a couple of thousand people. And it just does get you used to it. One of the best write-ups I had, this is before I always say I did an apprenticeship from 12 to 24 under my dad, but my family was featured in the Woman's Own. And because my dad used to do, what happened was these magic conventions, once a week they had a show, and they used to have a troupe of clowns that used to dress up only for that. That's all they used to do it for, and go round all the hospitals, hospices, and stuff like that. And each hospice and hospital would have a magic show, but these clowns would appear sometime in the afternoon. And it was like a comedy band, and I used to play the drum in the boys' brigade, so I was part of the band. And what happened was that this article was about the fact that we were all clowns, but we were all normal people as well, not as normal as I can be. And I was 11, but they wrote a bit about my family, and they said my dad was in the St. John Ambulance and a fireman, and my brother was a policeman, and my sister was at high school. And they put at the bottom, "Real joker of the family is David, 11, an expert conjurer." And I think that's the best write-up I had, because that just sums it all up. Just a joker, but an expert conjurer as well.
All right. You've got some great stories to tell. I know that there's a legend somewhere. That the story was that you actually beat Alex Dyke in a DJing competition. How true is that?
I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Right, OK.
Because I was the Isle of Wight disco dancing champion when I was young as well.
I remember those days as well. Yeah, I remember. Didn't we entered some competition where you were dancing in the singles, and I was part of a group from the Pan Clan. Oh. And there was a nightclub on the mainland. I think it must have been in Portsmouth, and it was like a top of a block of flats or something.
Oh yeah, well that, I think that was Nemo's, wasn't it?
Nemo's. Yeah. Oh blimey, we're going back now, aren't we?
Yeah. I remember. I actually danced once with Hot Gossip. Someplace else club.
Wow.
I would love the picture. They were really small. That's all I remember about them, really. But so, somewhere there's a picture of me and one Hot Gossip Girl one side and one Hot Gossip Girl the other, and they sort of put their legs up.
Was the famous lady there, the one who was married to Lloyd Webber? Was she part of Hot Gossip then?
No, she wasn't, because it was Sarah Brightman and Hot
That's
Gossip,
right,
wasn't
yeah.
it? She did the singing and they did the dancing, I think.
Right. Okay.
No, she wasn't there, sadly.
Oh, well, what a shame. What a shame, although you sound like you had a nice time.
Yeah, any calls, yeah.
No, we're not asking for calls yet. I want to find out about you. You know, it's a different way of doing things. You know, we get a guest in and we just want to find out a little bit about you. We're going to do this with David Pugh when he comes in as well. We'll find out a little bit about him and then we'll ask him some serious
He went to Trinity
questions.
Middle School, I remember that much.
Did he? Trinity, yeah. where's Trinity Middle
where,
School?
Cross the King College is, up Wellington Road.
Oh, right. Is that where you went?
No, I went to Nettleston Primary. School.
Right.
And then I went to Bishop Lovett Middle School, and then I went to Ryde High School and survived. Thank you. It was hard time at Ryde High School. Called the Riot. Sorry, am I buttoning?
So you grew up over that side of the island, because you're now a Newport man, aren't you?
I suppose I am known as a Newport man. I'm a Ryde boy and a Newport man. Ryde for pride, Newport for hot dinners, I used to say.
Newport for hot dinners.
I mean, people say to me, who do I support, football team? And I would say myself. But it was Ryde Sports when I was a boy.
All right.
I used to play at Partlands, and I wasn't too bad at football. And one day we went up there to see if we could progress into the grown-up team, so to speak, and a couple of our friends were playing, and they just went out and they had their legs chopped from them every time they got the ball by these big hefty blokes. And I thought, stuff that, I'm not going to have my legs broken just to kick a ball about.
Right. So then you took up table tennis.
Yeah, played you at table tennis.
Yeah, I think you always used to beat me. I don't know how, but I think you did. I think, I'm pretty sure you waved the magic wand.
Well, that year I got 98%, and I'm glad you said I beat you, because I only lost one game. I can't remember who it was to now. And people come up to me and say, I played you at table tennis and I beat you. And in their mind, they beat you all those years ago. And you think, well, I've got 98%, I only lost the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, half a dozen people beat me.
Wonder who that was.
Oh, I can't remember now.
I also remember your glasses always used to steam up and you used to, you know, take time out to sort of... And I didn't know whether it was a ploy or not.
Ploy. I used to get excited, didn't I, in the games.
Yes.
Screech and... I've got exceptionally long arms. I'm seeing my arms now. And you've got sooty on your desk.
We have got sooty. Yeah. And sweeps
and
over
sweeps
there.
Sweeps over there. I always preferred sweep. You should have a survey.
Yeah, no. Everyone prefers sweep, because sweep was a bit more cheeky. And you can understand what sweep says. You can't hear what sooty says.
No, you can't. But I did a show once. It was one of the magic conventions. They had Harry Corbett after he retired, because he handed the stuff over to his son. And then they had this show, and it was a grown-up show. And right in the middle, they had Sooty with Harry Corbett. And all the magicians were going, oh, Sooty. I mean, is he... But he made the puppet live. That's what was so good. He did the routine where he put him to bed and got him up. And it was a really nice bloke. He was a magician. One of my favourite magicians, Sooty.
Things have changed massively since those days. Do you think they've changed for the better or not?
What, in the country or the world? Or?
Well, you started talking about sooty and sweep, something so innocent as a glove puppet, and all of a sudden now kids would much rather watch The In-Betweeners.
Yeah, well, it depends what age, doesn't it, really?
Well, it does, but, I mean, you know, we'd come home and watch...
I like The In-betweeners too.
So do I. I like The In-betweeners as well. But, I mean, you got things that you would watch on telly. Standards have changed. Things have changed. I mean, you used to say to... You're probably the same, because we're roughly the same age. When your mum used to send it to your bedroom, it was a bit of a punishment because you never had nothing in it.
That's
you know,
true.
Nowadays, you've got loads of different things in it.
I can't remember being sent to my bedroom.
No, you're a goody-goody.
I don't know.
David Randini was a goody-goody.
No,
never ever sent to your room.
I can't remember being sent to your room.
I can't believe that. You must have been naughty a few times.
Oh, yeah, always naughty. Cheeky. You know, never anything to... I was naughty at school, you know. I was the class clown, especially at the high school. I mean, some teachers used to say, "Ran, get a pack of cards out and do half an hour, will you?"
I could see you doing that as well.
At primary school, they used to get me to stand up and just tell a story at the end of the day. Ran, a tell a story. We've got 10 minutes before we go home. And right. I used to just stand at the end of the class and tell a story.
Did you always think you were going to be... I mean, because quite honestly, I mean, you are a local, what I would call a local celeb.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a talented man. You're a nice man, but you're talented. You're very good at what you do. Do you feel any bitterness that maybe, you know, you should have been a national star?
Yeah, we call it fame without the fortune. You know, you're famous, but you don't... Mm. Get a lot of money for it, if that makes any sense, because of where you live. It's the swings and roundabouts thing. In some ways, I gave up fame for family, and I would never regret that. I think that's the most important thing.
Sure. But you must watch these Britain's Got Talent programmes and think, well, crikey, I can do that. And they give these people shows, and they stick them on another show, and you think, well, hang on a minute. You know, I mean, you're really, really talented. And I would imagine it's tougher, what you've done for the last X amount of years.
Yeah, it is hard.
It's tougher to survive than someone coming out of the woodwork, doing, you know, 5 minutes of fame. You've stayed at the top of your game for X amount of years.
Yeah, I think it's consistency. And it's also, the thing is that people see what you do now, but they don't see where it came from. It's a bit like you. You've had years of experience to build up to what you do now.
Yeah.
When I was a little boy, I must have gone to 1,000 magic lectures. I've seen some of the best magicians in the world. I was taught by them. Before I turned professional, when I left school, I worked in Barnett's, the butcher's. I worked in Ryde.
Barnett's? Let's just go back to Barnett's, the butcher's.
And then I worked in Newport. Now, for those who don't know where Barnett's is in Newport, it's where the Oxfam shop is now.
Yeah.
And there used to be a queue out the door every day.
Absolutely.
And it was the big supermarkets that killed it, really. I remember one day a woman coming around with a trolley, and she had 50 quid's worth of stuff in, and she bought a pie for 50p, put the pie on and drove the trolley off. And you knew that was the end of it, really, because, you know, 50p isn't going to make a place survive when they're spending 50 quid.
Mm.
Opposite. But what that shop did for me, and I had an audience all the time, of never-ending people coming in front of me. Some were good, some were rude, some were nice, some were old, some were young, some were completely crackers. You know, and you had them all in front of you all the time, and it learnt you to deal with people. With my close-up magic, most people think of me as for kid shows, but for instance, I did 10 years at two hotels. I did at Luckham Hall and Melville Hall every Friday and Saturday night.
Right.
I must have done 10,000 tables. And by that time, I could walk in and I could say to a waiter, "See that table over there? They're not going to really want me to come and do magic. So I'll let you go and ask if they want me." And they'd say, "No, they don't. How did you know?" You just know from someone like Darren Brown, that's how he started. He did the close-up magic around the tables. And I think that's the trouble nowadays, that in my day, you learnt an apprenticeship, you built on what you did.
Mm.
Now people want to jump in and earn the money straight away without any experience at all.
That is the trouble. And is that a problem in life now? You know, it just that's the way people are. They just want to earn X amount now, and not worry about any hard work, not worry about even turning up for work.
Well, you ask a lot of kids what they want to be, and they'll say famous or a pop star or whatever. They see someone on Big Brother, for instance, who becomes famous for no other reason than being an idiot in a house, or might be good in a house, you know. But suddenly they're transformed to fame. I guess I call it the Rudolph the Red Reindeer syndrome, really. You know, Rudolph was, you know, all the other reindeers did their work all those years, hundreds of years. And then one day he pops up with his red nose and he's the famous one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
He only did it for 5 minutes. They've been working for blooming hundreds of years.
So have you got any advice for people that want to get into your trade, you know, the entertainment industry maybe? Because, I mean, you've done it the way that I would say to people, that's the way you've got to do it. You've got to work hard, you've got to respect your elders, you've got to listen to your elders, and then you've got to make your own little niche.
Well, I think that it depends what sort of in magic, it depends what sort of magician we want to be. I mean, when I was younger, I did a silent act. I didn't talk at all. Hard to believe, isn't it? I did a manipulative act. And to be fair, I was very good at it. I did some of the gala shows around the country. I did one called the International Stars of Magic Gala Show at Tottenham Court Road. And there was only two British acts on it, of which I was one. And that was called manipulative act. And that means you produce fans of cards, thimbles, billiard balls. That sort of act, you're painting a picture. There's the other sort of magic where you, you know, like you've got Dynamo on the telly. Well, you're trying to wow everyone. The trouble is that if you're trying to wow everyone like he wows everyone, that most of those are set circumstances for him. And you go into some places and it isn't going to work for you like that. Personally, I think that in the job that I'm in, you have to build up your people skills first and then your expertise in magic alongside it. It's all about people. You know, when I go to a wedding, I've got one table of grandparents. I've got one table of kids. I've got one table of drunks. Do you know what I mean? You have to adapt and change from table to table to table to table. And sometimes you have to do different magic for them, depending on how they are.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
And then you'll do a table and there's one person who will turn their back on you because they don't like magicians or magic.
But you seem to, you mentioned earlier on, you seem to have a knack to sort of, I was a bit like, if I went out and did a night, you know, DJing or whatever, did a party, you could almost look around you and work out what you're actually going to play and how you're going to play it, because you have this sense of being able to work a crowd and understand a crowd. How do you deal with drunks then?
Avoid them as much as possible.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. Yeah. I tried to.
Short, sharp. You know, sometimes it can work to your advantage. I remember doing a show at the George once and the bloke said, can I do a card trick for his wife? I took her, he said, by the way, she loves giraffes. That is her favourite thing.
Oh, it just so happens.
Right. It so happened that I had a balloon, my balloons with me, and I made her a giraffe.
Right.
And off I went. About 3 weeks later, this bloke comes and said, this is Mr. Randini. He did this fabulous card trick and ended up with a giraffe. Well, I didn't do that, but in his mind. And I think that's the other thing about magic. It's in the mind of the person who watches it, not always the hands of the person who's doing it.
Sure.
The other thing is that I call them effects. Professional magicians call them effects, not tricks. It doesn't matter how a trick is done. I learned that I've never wanted to know how any magic trick is done. There are a lot of people in magic clubs, they spend all night saying, oh, look, I've learned how this is done and I've learned how that is done and I've learned. I don't see the point. You know, it's like, it's how you do it that counts. You know, and I think you've got to make it entertaining for people.
Sure.
And that's what I try. And the secret of my success, consistency, I reckon. I've had to consistently go out there and do it for 25 years every night and try and be as good as I can.
And I've got to be honest with you, David, I'm just saying this, you're blooming good at what you do. And you are a talent. Not only that, you're a nice guy as well, and a very approachable guy. There are some people that, you know, have got talent and they've done really well and they, you know, stick their nose in the air and don't want to know people. But you're very down to earth as well. And I know your family are very down to earth too.
Yeah, I've got a nice family, nice kids. The question, it's funny, my son, they always used to say when he was little, you're going to be a magician when you grow up. And one day, for what some unknown reason, he went, no. Right. And the reaction of the people, he loved. So then he said no every time.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to see what their reaction was when he said it. It's funny, isn't it? Now, his talent is Irish dancing. Very good he is too. You know, he came fourth in the European Championships last year, so he's not bad. And everyone who beat him was Irish and a girl. So, you know,
right.
You know, he's 17 now, but that's his talent. You know, we all have our own talents.
And good on him. But I mean, when you were 17, you were taking part in disco dancing competitions as well.
I suppose
well,
I was.
You?
Yeah, I never really thought of it that
way. There you go. He might follow on. You never know.
In fact, I was more known for disco dancing than magic when I was young.
Right.
Is it time for an advert?
We're going to do an ad break. First of all, you know, if there's anybody out there that
call me.
That wants to book,
it's quite
David.
Handy because it's quite well. Yeah. Well,
I have give to, yourself a plug.
Well, I have to say that in the last 20, I've done it for 25 years. This has been the hardest year I've ever had, and it's possibly because people just haven't got the money. They're booking late, and sometimes people want to book things that are cheap but not necessarily good. if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean, and what I like about what you've just said is that you could have been full of it and said, I'm busy, I'm really, really busy, I don't need a plug. But you're not, you're honest, and that's what I want to talk about next. Yeah. It's tough times out there.
Yeah, it is.
Is Britain broken? Do we need to fix it? And are the government doing the right
things? I was afraid you were going to ask me that question.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a break. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with a little bit more water for you as well, because you're going through that.
Yeah, they can.
Like, there's no tomorrow.
Someone can call in if they want to.
A quick break and then we'll come back.
Vectis Radio, home of the Isle of Wight phone-in. Call now, 01983 527 444. That's 01983 527 444.
Need an extension phone socket? Having a problem with your phone system? Or got a DVD or Blu-ray that needs connecting to your TV or hi-fi? West White Audio can help with all this and more. Call Kelvin on 0800 118 2484 or email info@westwhiteaudio.co.uk or via the Vectis Radio website.
Hi, I'm Maggie Curry, accredited U University life coach. I didn't know who I was for many years. I was adopted as a baby and was brought up to be who my parents thought I ought to be. Through U University Online, I have found myself, the real me, and as a result, my life has totally transformed. I finally, truly have a life. My learning is ongoing as life is a school and I attend every day. Do you have a sense that you're sort of two-dimensional and there is so much more to you? Do you want to change your life? If you're ready to commit to changing your life, I will coach you through U University and you will achieve so much more than you ever thought you were capable of. Email me at maggiecurry@uuniversityonline.com or visit www.allaboutlifecoaching.com or of course contact me through the Vectis Radio website.
Music Store Isle of Wight have moved into their brand new shop and currently have a sale on drum sets from £299, DJ equipment for the beginner, the full professional, systems tailored to suit the individual. We try to supply all instruments. If it's not in store, we will do our best to get it. Sheet music available to order, amplifiers and speakers to suit your individual needs, disco and stage lighting. You'll find them in Shanklin High Street or check out www.musicstore-iow.co.uk. Or telephone 01983 719 790.
Road signage, coning, traffic lights, lane and flow filtering. Docklands Traffic Management, working to keep your journey safe. Visit us on the Vectis Radio website. Docklands Traffic Management, safely managing the road ahead.
The life of a defence lawyer has long held its fascination for the public, from Perry Mason and Rumpole of the Bailey through to their modern-day equivalents, Silk and The Good Wife. To hear the latest from the legal world, listen to me, Gaff Khan of RJR Solicitors, on my Vectis Radio Legal Beagle slot, or come in and see me at my free surgery in Newport on the first Saturday of each month. RJR Solicitors, legal services with a human face. Visit us at Ryde, Newport, Shanklin and Freshwater, or online at rjr.co.uk.
Coming soon to Vectis Radio, a brand new weekend breakfast show.
George here, just telling you about the weekend breakfast show I'll be presenting every Saturday and Sunday morning from 8 till 10. During the show, we'll take a look back through at some of the news which hit the headlines in the week. Also, we'll be playing out some of your get-up-and-go tunes to wake you up, and I'd love to know what you'd be up to over the weekend. Whether it's catching up on the soaps, going out for breakfast, or just having a day of nothing. There's only one place to be every Saturday and Sunday morning from 8 till 10. That's Weekend Breakfast on Vectis Radio. With me, George Steed.
The best mix of hits anywhere on the planet. This is Vectis Radio.
So, David Randini's in, and we're asking him the question, if Britain is really, really broken, how do we fix it, in your opinion?
Well, we need a magic wand, I think. I think if you're going to fix anything, I think it's not just Britain, I think it's the whole world, isn't it, that has its problems. I think if you fix anything, it's got to be fixed from the top. And it's got to be fixed from the bottom. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
If I'd started anywhere, I'd start with getting people to talk to their kids when they're in their pushchairs, walking around with them, not being on the phone or on a cigarette or whatever. You know, when my kids were little, and I'm sure when my parents were, they used to say, here's a bus, here's a tree, here's a thing. They used to talk to their kids. But now you do see people going around with a phone in one hand and a cigarette in the other, and the kids are being pushed around, and shut up, I'm talking. And you think, you know, the kids are the most important thing in your life. If we can start them early, And perhaps we only think it's a broken Britain because of our age. Do you know what I mean? I'll give you a good example. When my son was born, for various reasons, he was born in Portsmouth. And my brother lived at Portsmouth. I used to have to get I got the bus to go and see my wife. I was there at the birth, but I had to go back the next day. So there I am on the bus with a bunch of flowers and a balloon. And there's two old ladies sat behind me. And they obviously knew where I was going. And this woman said, "What a terrible time to bring a child into the world." And I looked behind at this lady and I thought, I think I can guess roughly how old you are. So I said, "Oh, don't mind me asking." I said, "But when were you born?" She said, "Well, I was born in 1942.
Oh, right.
I said,
"That's a good time.
What a terrible time to bring a child into a world." And she said, "Oh, no, I've had a lovely life." I said, "Well, I'm sure my kiddie will when he grows up." And that is the thing with life, I suppose, that you adapt to how things are when you're there. Doesn't mean you can't change them, but things are changing all the time. But it's like my kids. They're all into gadgets and computers and iPads and, you know, they've been brought up with it.
That really is a horrible thing to say when you think about it, isn't it?
What is?
Well, what she said to you. What an awful... I would have been insulted. So are you saying Britain is broken? By the way, if you want to call...
No, you said that. I never said it was broken.
if you want to call now, you can. 527-444. We wanted to just get sort of half an hour under our belt with no calls, because I just wanted to do an interview, really,
just
and find out...
Couldn't interrupt me, could you? That's no, trouble.
I'll tell you what, you're not the worst. David Icke is a really tough man to interview, because he's got so much to say, and you can't, you know, every now and again you want to chip in, but it's a case of, you know, when you see
doesn't he go on? I talk to him quite a lot.
Choose your right time.
He's another guy, isn't he, that I was talking to you off air about Claire, that she's a great caller, because you agree with 50% of what she says, you can't, and then there's 50% that you don't agree with, which is a great call. And that's the same with David Icke, really. He's a very intelligent and clever man. And then he'll say something and people will think, "What? You know, why is this?" You know, and they always remember him for the things the bits in between. And when he writes a book, he always puts something controversial in it, because that's what sells the book and that's what gets people to come and see him.
Sure.
So I suppose the wise person is the person who tries to distinguish what is right and what is wrong.
Kevin Barclay J says, "Britain is not broken. Well, no more than it has been. We are just being sold a lie." It's an interesting theory.
What does he mean by that?
I don't know. I don't know whether he goes into great detail or not. Sense of pride is alive and kicking everywhere. Just look at the royal wedding last year. We do fly the Union flag. People are proud to live in Britain, apart from a tiny minority.
Yeah, I suppose he's right to a degree. I do think we're going to have all this in the news today, where Scotland wants to be independent. You have this English, Scottish, Isle of Wight. I think living on the Isle of Wight, we have a sense of identity that many people in England don't have. And of about being English as well. For instance, they quite often had this St George's Day thing out at Cowes, where many parts of the country where they wouldn't have it, because they didn't want to upset or offend or. Now, year before last, I did 6 weeks in I worked in the schools in Wales doing road safety magic shows. And in every school in Wales, the kids have put a notice up at the end of their hall. It says, "Proud to be Welsh." Now, I've been in hundreds of English schools. I've never seen one that says "proud to be English," because they probably wouldn't be allowed to put it up.
Yeah, that's the sad thing.
Yeah.
Because they're not proud at all. I saw a message on Facebook the other day, over the weekend, and it was on about the St George's flag. I mean, you know, let's start a campaign to say we can put this flag up whenever we like and wherever we like, and we shouldn't have people telling us to take it down.
I think that's why people go so mad over the football. You know, when the football's come on, it's their one excuse to get up and say we're English, and they go mad. Flags everywhere then, aren't they?
See, I don't understand. I'm a big football fan. I love my football. I love my team, if you like. But I don't understand the passion sometimes when for instance, your team loses, you get all upset. And equally, when you go into a crowd of people, maybe England are playing, you become more passionate about your country. And yet the rest of the year, the rest of the time, there's no passion whatsoever. So what happens there then?
Is it because they're allowed to do it? you know, that is the only time that they're allowed to do it. They're not allowed to be passionate about England in another time. Let me give you an example. When I was at in Wales. So
right, yeah.
I would say, good morning, bora da, or good afternoon, pre-houndar, which is, okay. And then I would say, look, I'm from the Isle of Wight. And I did some Welsh-speaking schools, not many, but I did mostly English-speaking schools in Wales, because they're both, you see. So I'd say it in Welsh first, and then I'd say, look, I'm from the Isle of Wight, so I speak English, and I actually pulled the wool over their eyes a little bit, because I said a few Isle of Wight words, like Malishag and Namet, and explained what they were, and then said, well, I can't talk in Isle of Wight, or you won't understand me, so I'll have to talk in English, which is quite a nice way of getting around the Welsh, not talking in Welsh all the time.
Mm.
So I would say it in Welsh, then I'd say it in English. And next week, I was in Dagenham and Redbridge, and I went to a school, and the woman gave me a bit of paper, said, oh, by the way, she said, before you, when you say good morning, could you say it in Tamil, Bengali, and Lithuanian? Right, and then English. Right. And I said, yes, I can. I said, but last week I was in Wales, so I said it in Welsh first, then English. I actually knew Lithuanian, Laba Sarita says good morning there, and I got them to write it phonetically so I could say it for the other children. And I said, but shouldn't I say it in English first, as we're in England? And then, and she said, oh no, we don't want to upset anyone, do we? Now that's where it's wrong, because those people, they wouldn't be upset if you spoke in English first. It's people thinking that they might be upset that you say it in English first. And that's the trouble with half these problems. It's people worrying about what everyone else might think or say.
You're right.
When there's nothing to say anyway. I can't see that if we're in an English country and we put a Union Jack up or an English flag up, that people should find it offensive in any way.
Yeah, that's something that's got to be sorted out, because that's crazy. Earlier on, I kid you not, I was talking, I was comparing you, and because we were asking the question, who's the most popular islander? As you recall, last year we did a phone in, who's the most popular, and you kind of, well, you won it in our, you know, we did a survey and you won it. Okay, very very close second was Derek Sandy.
Yeah,
and I was talking about this earlier on, and I mentioned the fact that when Derek Sandy was on about 18 months ago, he was again, he came in, did an interview and type phone in, you know, we got people to phone in as well, but it was just a fascinating interview, because there were times in his life that were really dark.
Yeah,
and I use the term dark, okay, because that's what I want, you know. It wasn't a racist comment. Somebody phoned me 5 minutes after saying that this morning and saying that was a racist comment, or was it a slip of the tongue? It wasn't a slip of the tongue. It was a dark moment.
Yeah, and I've had dark moments in my life. I think most people do, don't you?
But the fact is that people make it a racist, you know, they want to make something out of it. And that's, and I think that's the trouble half the time. And that is a problem of British behaviour. You know, you go into a school and they say to you, oh, you can't say it in English. Hang on, where are we? And what do we mostly speak?
Yeah, I think you have to adapt and be aware of your circumstances. And I mean, next week, for instance, I've got a show for a group of Jehovah Witnesses. Now, I have to say to them, what can I say and what can't I say? Because I want to respect what you have. I mean, I think it's a Christmas come birthday celebration, but they don't celebrate Christmas or birthdays. So you can't say that, you know. So right. You have no demons or ghosts. Or it was really strange, because I had to knock on the bloke's door. So it's surreal, me knocking on a Jehovah Witness's door and then getting him to answer it.
That's funny.
It was.
If people do want to phone in, they can. 527-444. Okay, you get straight through to David. I'm sure, I bet you, that there are so many, and we know that there are so many people listening to this, and they're just enthralled by what you've got to say. And they're probably in agreement. I guarantee they're in agreement with a lot of what you're talking about. Because, you know, how do we fix Britain? Usually, run-of-the-mill stuff. Oh, let's close the borders. Let's sack all the politicians. But really and honestly, you've gone back to basics and decency, going back to actually talking. Because the problems aren't just up there with bankers and politicians. They are at grassroots family level.
Well, that's true. And I think whoever's in, I would say whoever you vote for, the government always gets in. But whatever they do, if they say, you know, one thing, there's always 10 people going to say something else. If you look at all the Sky News and everything else, I wonder if we'd have won the Second World War now if we had the media that we had now, because there'd be so much intrusion on it and debate and
negativity.
Negativity. I mean, it's a terrible thing, you know. But every time someone gets killed in the in Afghanistan, they show their body coming back, and it's terrible, dreadful thing. But if they'd have done that in the Second World War, it would have been news from morning to night, you know, or the First World War, you know, 60,000 in an hour or whatever it was at the Somme.
Yeah, no.
It's frightening.
Absolutely. I think that when you look at if Britain is broken, which a lot of people will say that it's not, a lot of people will say that it is, why do they come up with that opinion? Because it's what they've seen on the TV. And I think that TV and newspapers are what's wrong with Britain today. Hi, who's this?
Hello, it's Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
You're through to Magic Man.
Oh, right, thank you. Hello.
Talk to me, you might want to talk to him.
The thing about Britain being a broken country, I don't think it's suddenly broken. I think it's been crumbling for a long, long while. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think the basis of everything really is the benefit system that started out to be such a good idea is now so abused. And I think that has actually now working against the country because it's easy for people not to do anything, and once people don't want to do anything, you're in a downward spiral, and it's generation after generation. Yeah.
Are you saying, Jackie, that originally it was meant as a safety net?
It was a
and
safety
now it's
net.
A lifestyle choice
That's
for some
right.
people.
It's now a career. I think, there are career sponges, aren't there?
Well, what we've got to understand is that the welfare state, we pay more for that than we do for our health service, our fire service, our police, our army and everything else all put together.
And I think, love or not, David Cameron, he is, I think, perhaps silly or brave or bold enough to actually try and stop this, and it is happening. I was reading in the the Sunday paper yesterday about a family who have 9 children who live in Maida Vale in London in a huge house, and they get £2,000 a week on housing benefits. Mm-hmm. Now that's coming to an end next week.
Good.
They've said no. We're not paying that. You move to a cheaper part of London. We're not paying that. And as from next week, they will be homeless. And they've lived a
that's
fantastic lifestyle. No, that's not good. But they should never have been allowed to have chosen.
So whose fault is that?
I
is that a bit of both?
People come up with such silly arguments about all their rights. They're saying, it's our right to have as many children. Well, yes, it is. But if you can't damn well look after them and house them, then you don't have them, do you? It is, I think they've got something like over £60,000 a year on benefits. Now, you know, that's crazy, isn't it? That is crazy.
It is crazy. You're right, Ian.
I'll just listen to Jackie. You know, how do we fix it all then? First of all, is it broken, or are we being fed a load of nonsense from the media? And if it is broken, how do we fix it? Is it decency, do you think?
I think the media has a lot to answer for. I think that they sort of they hype up negative points. You never get anybody hype up anything good, do you? They jump upon anything negative and wind us all up. As I say, it's nothing new, is it? The welfare system, it's nothing new, but it seems to be more and more exploited now, and I don't think that has helped, because people aren't working and moaning about the Eastern Europeans coming in and taking our jobs, but then they'll work for nothing. And so, you know, people are going to employ them. It's just one thing after another, isn't it? And I think the government's trying to bring back apprenticeships, isn't it? Well, that will get the youngsters feeling that they are worthwhile to do something. It's not going to be easy, and I don't know whether this government can fix it, but I think, to their credit, they are trying. They are trying, and they are trying to stop these fat cats getting all this money. They're trying to get people out to work, they're trying to do apprenticeships, and they're trying to get the benefit scroungers off the system. I don't think they'll not help them, but I think they're not sort of letting them pick and choose where they want to live and demanding what they want. I think that's seems to be happening is that a lot of them seem to use their human rights excuse to get away with anything.
Do you think, Jackie, it's because now, in the economic crisis that we're in, that now they can't afford them? You know, whereas before, they were quite happy to keep them quiet and off to one side as long as they didn't keep any trouble.
Let's
appease people. And you don't think that?
No, I'm not sure. See, I mean, I might be very wrong and I might offend a few people, and I'm sorry if I do, but I think that the downfall of the benefit system has been the Labour Party all the years, because they give and give and give to people who don't work. And, of course, all those people vote them in time after time. They don't like the likes of Cameron because he's saying, no, you know, you've got to get off your backside and go out and find a job. And I think it's been years and years and years of the Labour Party kowtowing to the unions, who obviously fund them, so they, you know, they don't stand up to them. And I think it's a long, long-term problem now that's going
although
to
you
be
say
very,
that,
very difficult.
Although you say that, Jackie, Conservatives had a fair old chunk of time, didn't they? 18 years.
Yes. I mean, no one's going to get it right,
no.
Are they? No one's going to get it right.
No, as I said before,
possible.
It doesn't matter who you vote for, the government always gets in.
There's pros and cons, but I think just sometimes, if a party is in too long, then...
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, because I agree with the fixed term thing.
Yes.
But
like the Americans.
Well, you see, now ours is fixed term now. But
yes.
Where did they come up with the 5 years? Every other political thing is 4 years.
Yes.
4 years fixed. And I do believe that any Prime Minister, no matter which party, should only have two terms of office like an American president.
Mm.
If you can't do it in 8 years, then you can't do it. Mm. And then they should think of someone else to come in and do it.
Because there's always the long-term borrowing as well that's got us deeper into the mess that we've been in, and that's just compounded everything, because it's not just a British recession. It's
well, we seem to have been in a mess ever since I was a child.
Yes,
I've got relatives in Australia.
Never
and,
right,
No, I've got relatives in Australia, and in Australia, they haven't had the recession hit like we have.
No.
For two reasons. One is they got the mineral wealth, which they sell to China, which is a pretty good reason for not being too much in a recession. But the other reason, the other thing is they got the weather. And that sounds a stupid thing to say, but most of it is attitude. You know, when they were in recession, I was talking to my relatives, and they said, well, what can we do? Put another thing on the barbie, you know, we'll have to cut down a little bit, but it's a lovely evening, we'll go out for a walk
people
instead
don't
of...
People seem to want to have to cut down, do they? People seem to take this recession very personally, don't they? I mean, we've all had to cut back and cut down, regardless, really, of whether you're in as bad a state as somebody or not. But I think it just has to be common sense, which, of course, is the basis of I think getting back on track. But no one seems to have common sense, do they? It's all I don't know.
I think, as I mentioned, there are too many people trying to tell too many other people what they should do all the time.
That's right. Yes. I mean, choice is more or less not taken away from you, but like this thing that now they're saying that about the drinking, aren't they? It's don't drink for 2 days a week. Well, does that mean that you can drink the other five? You know,
Well, that's what it says, though, Jack, isn't it? Because I watched,
like that, doesn't it?
I watched that this morning, and I felt really bad that over the last couple of weeks you get into the habit of having a drink a night.
Yeah.
Then you see that, and you think, oh, hang on a minute. I can go with that Monday, Tuesday, and the rest of the week I'm going to be all right. That's ridiculous.
I think anything like that has to be a personal choice. You can't be. I mean, people know the effects of overeating, over drinking, smoking, and it's a personal choice, isn't it? I don't think you can, you know, tell everybody what you can and can't do. And it's just not the government, it's the medical profession as well. And I know they have to pick up the pieces, but that's the job they're in as well, isn't it?
They'll be telling you next that too much TV is bad for your health, and you won't be watching
bad
those little stories about not drinking or only drinking twice a week.
I don't know who's got the solution to it all.
Well, Jackie, I must admit, I've read so much about the evils of drinking that I've given up reading.
thanks for your call, Jackie.
Okay,
cheers
bye-bye.
Now. Bye. Are we fed a lot of nonsense from the media then? Are we in a mess because the media says
we're
in a mess?
I think we're led a lot by the media, aren't we? I mean, I'll give you an example. I've said that a lot today. I'll give you an example, but I will. Northern Rock. watching it with my son, and when the Northern Rock thing first came up, I said to my son, Mary Poppins. So what do you mean, Mary Poppins? Feed the birds, tuppence a bag. Right? I don't know if you ever watched Mary Poppins.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Here's his tuppence. And then they have this thing, and they have a run on the bank because he wouldn't give his tuppence to them. And that's what happened in Northern Rock. When you looked at Northern Rock, they were saying, oh, it might be falling, the blah, 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 and people are going to want their money out. Well, no one thought about it till the media told them about that. And then the next day, there's all these people queuing up. And then they're reporting on the news that they caused in the first place, which is a run on the bank, which they caused by telling them that there might be a problem, there might be a run on the bank. Do you see what I mean?
You're a fascinating guy. You really
am I?
Are.
Perhaps I That's look at things so, a different way.
Yeah, that is... I can see Pete over there. He's sort of nodding his head. And I'm thinking, that is so true. And so simple as well, isn't it? It's so simple.
I think we make life too complicated sometimes, you know? Sometimes simple things are best. Someone asked me what I'd do if I... Because I looked at perhaps being the MP one day. Or... MEP. I looked at going to the MEP because I used to say to people, who's your MEP? Oh, I don't know.
Do you know what? I'd stop you there.
Yeah.
I would say, and honestly, hand on heart, that you would make not only a really good MP, but a popular MP. And that's no disrespect to David, Andrew Turner, that's
yeah,
the one.
He's a very nice Andrew man, very Turner. Knowledgeable
he
man.
He is a very... But you could do that job standing on your head. I guarantee it.
Well, I think the idea of an MP is to represent the community that you are representing. And you can't be a cure for everything. You're representing us in Parliament. I mean, I don't think I could be leader of the council or do a council job. I think I'd find that harder than being an MP.
Yeah. But just the analogy over the you know, the what you've just said about Northern Rock, I just think that makes me look at you and I think to myself, you are so in tune with what you're doing, and you don't have to be. There are. So I'm not having to go at Claire, and I'm not having to go at the other people that phone the phone in sometimes, and they get a bit aggressive and they say, close the borders, and like you've said earlier, you agree with 50% of sometimes what people say, and I agree with a lot of what Claire says in the past, that, you know, close the borders, do this, do that, but I think with you, it's a little bit more. There's a little bit more subtlety. There's a little bit more reasoning behind it.
If I travel anywhere, I do anything. I look at how things are done in other places and how we could use them here. Some I wouldn't use, and some I would. For instance, I've just done some road safety shows in Swindon. Now, Swindon is magic roundabout country. They've got roundabouts everywhere. In fact, they've got 6 roundabouts round a roundabout.
Really?
And it's called the magic roundabout.
Yeah, it is.
It's as long as you know how to use it. Now, what's a roundabout for? It's for going round. So what do we do on the Isle of Wight? And it looks very pretty and very nice. Where's the biggest black spot? Where do most accidents happen on the Isle of Wight? Well, I'll tell you. Because I know, they happen outside of Tesco's on that roundabout.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Why? Because they planted a load of trees in the middle.
So you can't see.
You can't see what's coming round. Great example of that is the roundabout at St Mary's.
Yeah.
Right? And it does look nice. I think they should put the trees in other places. A roundabout, if you went to council and said, look, I want to put a drive in, first thing they'd say is, well, what's your vision like? Can you see the cars coming round the thing? Yeah, in a roundabout, they put all these trees up that are going to grow and grow and grow. And if you pull out of the industrial estate there to turn left, you're taking your life in your hands if a car is coming down from St Mary's. Because they will think, oh, there's nothing coming in the right, I'll go straight round the roundabout. Doesn't matter how fast your car is, you're putting up a hill out the way. It's just a common sense thing that...
Absolutely.
I mean, if I was, I've got to say that if I was in Parliament, first thing I would do, I have this bugbear about petrol. And my bugbear about petrol is this, that petrol, we pay duty on. Okay, fair enough. We have a tax on petrol. Then we pay VAT. But we don't pay VAT on the petrol. We pay VAT on the whole lot, of which 60% is tax. So we are paying 20% tax on 60% tax. In other words, we're paying tax twice for the same thing of petrol. Now, if it was me, I'd say, I don't mind paying VAT on petrol, but I'm not paying VAT on my tax. You're getting another 20% out of me. For what? For taxing me on my own tax.
Mm.
It's the only email I had read out on a national radio station that said, this bloke's right, from the Isle of Wight.
Spot on, you are.
But it is right. And it's things like that that make people feel that life is unfair, you know.
Do you know what? You are so... I mean, honestly, you are so in touch with... I mean, just mentioning the roundabout thing, I'm just looking at it from a cynical point of view. You know, I just wonder, that roundabout, the Whippingham roundabout, I wonder who sponsors that roundabout. You know, the more accidents, who's going to benefit? Probably the place across the road there. You know, the crematorium. Sponsored by the crematorium. We create the accidents and then we take the divvy for it.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but that Whippingham roundabout, they wouldn't let, when Alex Dyke was on the radio doing a phone-in on Asa Singleton, do you remember?
Yes.
They put a notice up about a campaign to help him, and they said, you can't have that notice on the roundabout because it's blocking the vision and it's, you know, it's a hazard to drivers. Don't get me wrong, I want more greenery around. They could stick them all along fairly along that bit of grass there, you know.
That is so... I mean, the Whippingham roundabout is awful. There's so much going on there. It's like, I'm thinking about having me holidays there.
But this is the trouble of the world. There's probably a grant that someone gets paid for, that some community work can be done to put the stuff on the roundabout, which is all well and good.
Put it somewhere else, though.
Keep
the roundabouts, you know, and make them as roundabouts.
You know, the other day you were saying about David Pugh and how we can save money. I think that if we ask people who use things all the time, I'm going to give another example now. When you drive along Bridlesford Road, there's been lots of accidents there on that corner as you come out, I think it's Blacklands Lane. As you go out from Newport, you turn right and then you turn left to go to Haven Street. You turn right, that's a really nasty corner to turn out. And I've done shows in the houses opposite. And the bloke says to me, every time I hear a load of screecher brakes, somebody's died.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad it is. But when cars come along there, you indicate to turn round. If you see a car coming along and you think, oh, I can get out before he comes, someone's coming along by the side of them will overtake them. Then you're stuffed.
Yeah.
And they're stuffed. They've overtaken, you've just turned into a road and you've got two cars coming towards you at high speed. Very simple along there. It wouldn't cost a lot of money to put no overtaking lines, you know, the...
Absolutely right.
And perhaps make it a 40-mile-an-hour limit between those two.
Common sense, isn't it?
It's just common sense.
Yeah.
It wouldn't cost a lot of money. It might save lives. You know, you don't have to. Also,
let's take another call. This would be the final call. Cool. It's almost 1 o'clock. Hi, who's this? Well, they've gone.
Well, thank you, final caller. Yeah. The other day I was the final caller and you cut me off.
We've got to get to 1 o'clock. We've got to get to the news and we've got Pete Walkden up next and he's doing that. No, that's Pete Barber.
I was going to say, he's changed, hasn't he? He's got his hair. He's
got some hair now.
Oh, there he comes.
Do you know, I could talk to you all day because, one, you really understand what's going on and it's not... Do you know what I mean? You're not...
But what... Well, when we were saying about it would be nice to be MP and you'd be popular and all the rest of it, who could be MP and who will be MP are two different ball games.
Hmm. Actually, you missed something here.
What?
Well, next time round, we've got two MPs on the island.
Yes, we have.
So you could be MP South.
Yeah, you could be MP South and Pete Harris could be MP North.
Yeah, well, it's a possibility, but who could and who would? I went for the MEP one. I went down to find out about it, you see. And the first thing you do is you have to put £5,000 up of your own money.
Oh, right.
Right. A deposit, which you might lose. Because I didn't know our MEP was, you see. And I thought, well, it's 67.5 grand a year. I'd work really hard for that money. Because to me, that's an awful lot of money, you know. Yeah. That's without expenses and travelling and all the rest of it. I think that's quite a good wage.
But do you know what? When what you happened-